Coulter,
1,000 pounds. That's the most important part. So you think about that with respect to, I see a lot of times a 10,000 pound trailer with 8,000 pounds of tires underneath it. So if he's got a full tank of water, he's got all of his wife's beer and wine, he's got all the stuff for a 2-week voyage somewhere, there's a good chance, and especially in the summertime in Arizona, there's a good chance he's going to have a tire problem. And of course, he's going to blame it on everybody and their mother and how cheap the tires are and all that kind of stuff. But when I look at the tire, I see it's all blistered. I see the glue has come apart. And I look at this and I go, this is your fault, buddy. You got this tire hot, and it was, and the two front tires are a lot hotter than the back two tires, and what that means is the tongue of the trailer is too low, so the tongue needs to be lifted 2 or 3 or 4 inches until the trailer's level, and then that way you will distribute the weight of the trailer equally over 4 tires. Now, if the tongue's too high, think about it. If the tongue is too high, so the front of the trailer is skyward in an exaggerated way, it's going to overload the back axle. That's kind of how it works. So ladies, if you've been involved with traveling with trailers and your husband's had a significant amount of tire problems, of which he blames on the brand, which is what I always hear, then ladies, just have him stop by a Discount Tire and say, what's the gross load of the trailer? Because I'm getting ready to take a trip, and it's exactly the way it's going to be when I tow it to New Orleans. What's the gross vehicle weight of the trailer? And tell me if your tires will carry that weight. So that gives you peace of mind. And you never go wrong, because you always run the tires at maximum inflation that's written on the side of the tire. Maximum inflation 35, maximum inflation 42, 45, 50, 60, even 80. But it'll be written on the tire. A tire that's run at maximum inflation is not going to heat up. The glue comes apart at 200, okay? You can't afford to get anywhere close to 200. And most of the times when the tire sidewall is blistered and half the tread's off of it, the tire was burnt to death. The tire came apart because of the tremendous heat. So we go look at the opposite side tire, whether it's on a motor vehicle or a trailer, and we find it's got heat damage. But the two front tires look brand new. Well, the tongue of the trailer was too high. The front of the trailer was too high, which overloaded the back axle of the two. Okay, that's how it kind of works. While we're and 602-508-0960. Oh, we have a caller, so we'll just go right there. Gil, who might that be?
Say good morning to Tom.
Tom, good morning. How can I help you?
Good morning to you. Got a 15 Dodge Journey. Got 90,000 miles on it, but I want to change my plugs and the coils. I've got one bad coil. Do I need to change all of them?
No, I wouldn't. If you came into my shop, I would say, no, I don't want to do all of them, and I want to verify your problem, so I'm going to put it on the engine analyzer, and I'm going to load it, put it in drive, and hold my foot on the brake, and I'm going to get it to da-da-da, miss and stuff. And then it's probably going to throw a code, and then if they're easy to get to, I'm going to swap 4 with 5 and see if the problem moves. And if the problem moves, I'm home free. So that's the diagnostic process. Do you have a code?
Yeah, and I got the code, and it's been identified as the number 4.
Okay. If you want to make sure that it's number 4 and not the spark plug or not a lean condition or not anything else, swap 4 with 5 or swap 4 with 3. See if the problem moves. If it does move, okay, then you're right. You got a coil issue.
Well, but once you get that off to change a plug, might as well change all the plugs and then just replace the one coil and find it, or swap the coil.
You can do that. Here's what I think. I've been working on cars since 1968. I've owned my own shop since 1972. That's an effort of to get into a comfort zone, and that's an effort that my car will love me more. And depending on the mileage and how much has the Journey got on it, how many miles?
90.
Okay, and those are the original spark plugs.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah, it's time. Your car's been around the world 4 times, 100,000 miles, 25,000 miles around the girth of the earth. So at 90, I agree. I'd get a tube of dielectric grease. I would twist the boots and gently take them off, keep track of where they go, change the spark plugs, gap them appropriately, put them in, and then when you put the boot, you just take this little dielectric and you put about half as much as you do on your toothpaste or on your toothbrush. And it won't be as fat as your toothbrush, so just put some on there. And then when you put the, slide the boot on, turn it left and right and snap it on, and now you'll have no problem getting the boots off next time.
Okay, well, these have the insert, and you got to pull off the cover there, and they've got the coils on a long stem.
Yeah.
Go down into.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's okay. Okay. It's you're pulling the cover off, and it's just covering the spark plugs, and they want them to look pretty, and now you're not going to carry a bunch of dust inside there. You're not going to have any water from a rainstorm, so the cover's supposed to keep the ignition dry. But your car will not be a submarine, so don't go across the river thinking that you're dry enough to do that. All righty?
Okay, thanks very much.
You're welcome. Right. You're welcome. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. One of the things that let me just tell you what happened. A guy took issue with something I said on the last radio show, and he wrote a nice letter to me, a nice email to me. And, I'll say it's nice. There was some portion of it that wadded my panties up, but that's okay. And he took issue with, you say that when you use synthetic oil, the shop may call you back at 5,000-7,000 miles. And you don't agree with that. And then you say, you decide what to do, and in my shop, if you get synthetic oil, depending on how many miles you got on it, we're going to put the sticker at 10,000 to 12,000 miles. And if it's a new car, we're going to go to 15, or what the owner's manual says, and that's the third option. One, you can ask the shop what to put in it, and there's a lot of shops that will tell you exactly what you should do, but there's a whole lot of shops that are going to call you back at 8,000 miles, and those spark plugs are designed to go 15, probably, depending on brand. So it's in their best interest to call you back at 8, because they can change the spark plugs again and make more money. So your owner's manual is the Bible for your car. And if the owner's manual says if you use synthetic oil, they want you to change it at 10,000 miles, then change it to 10,000 miles. And tell whoever does your oil change, put the door sticker at 10,000 miles over this. Here's the third part. I run 15, 16,000 miles. First of all, my Dodge diesel truck holds a lot more oil than your Hondas. Okay. Number two, I'm running up and down the mountain and sometimes with the trailers. So there's not going to be a lot of moisture in my oil because I'm running hot with a trailer or a trailer full of horses. So water boils at 212 and I'm running at 220 and I don't care. 220 is normal accepted engine temperature. But at 220, we're boiling the oil. Or boiling the water out of the oil. And then the PCV valve, positive crankcase ventilator, or positive crankcase ventilation, the PCV valve is going to suck the moisture out of the engine from the oil. So because I'm highway miles, and I got 168,000 miles on a Dodge 1-ton dually, and it's a 12, by the way, a 2012. So it's 13 years old, and I got 168,000 miles on it. I run an oil analysis every once in a while, and I'm looking for growth of different kinds of metals. And there's five or six different kinds of metals. I'm looking at water. So when I run an oil analysis, it tells me everything I need to know. If I got a bunch of brass in there, something's coming apart. If nothing's in there other than normal water and normal detergent, then we're done and everything is fine. So I understand that he was trying to draw a picture that I was hypocritical. But let me just tell you again, typically the shop's oil change interval will conflict what your owner's manual says. Your owner's manual is the Bible. Certainly, a synthetic oil on any kind of car is going to be between 10 and 12,000 miles. The reason I run 15, 16,000 miles is because I hold a lot of oil. I think it's 6 or 8 quarts of oil. Number two, I'm running my truck kind of tough, but the oil has nothing to do with that. And I'm not gathering up water because my engine temperature is at 220. That's how it works. On the other hand, if you're Grandma Moses and you just drive to the liquor store, I'm teasing you now, drive to the liquor store once a week and you go to the post office, you know, three times a week and you go here and you go there and it's all short trips. If your mileage in your owner's manual says 5, I'd be at 5, or maybe I'd be at 4, because you never warm up the engine, you never boil the water out of it. All you're doing is driving from point A to point B, and that's 2 to 10 miles. And so I'm going to put your oil change a little earlier, because I know you're never going to get rid of the water in your oil, and I know that that's an opportunity for me to look your car over. Now, if you do like me and you do 12, 15, 16,000 miles, you also have a responsibility in that period of time to check your tires, check your other fluids, and so forth. Because that's what's done in an oil change. We check tires, belts, hoses, and fluids. And we look for obvious things that are going to break you down. So there is an inspection and there is a benefit. So if you're older and you have a car that you put, 5,000 miles a year, then I think you take it in once a year and make sure they check the fluids, the belts, and the hoses. That's all. And if it's only 3,000 miles, I don't care. If you're supposed to use a semi-synthetic and you can go to 5,000 miles, I don't care. I think 3,000 is appropriate for you. Let me open it up. 3,000 to 5,000. That's how it goes. 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. We have 5. 602-508-0960, and I'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. 21 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, and you're welcome to join us. The phone number, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. And ladies, if you want to call in, it starts like this. My husband says this, my dad says this, or you can say, my brother says this, but my manual says that. And then we're going to talk about the environment and how you drive, and do you drive short trips, and I'm just teasing you now, short trips to the liquor store and back, or is your church clear across town, or do you go to Prescott every once in a while to play golf? Those are the kinds of things that make everything kind of variable. Now, we work on lots and lots of cars, and each one of them, we can look at the odometer, and we can look at the condition of the car, and we kind of know how the car is used. So if the car comes in and it's a 16-year, 18-year-old young man that just started driving, then the back tires or the front tires in a front-wheel drive case, the back tires are going to be considerably less traction and tread than the front tires. And we're going to also know that this thing got into its heat cycle kind of early, because you can imagine, as we imagine, that young men that get a car at 16, 17 years old are going to run it kind of hard, and that's okay. We just getting up to temperature is fine. There's lots of folks and lots more guys, old guys, like me, old guys, that think, I want my car to run at 180. That's just a bad deal. Your engine will love you if you get the oil temperature somewhere close to 200 or 220. It's okay. The oil is designed for those kinds of temperatures. Let me give you an example. Oil turns to a tar. A conventional oil turns to tar about 300 degrees. A semi-synthetic, dependent on the percentage of conventional oil and semi-synthetic oil, or the other way around, conventional oil and synthetic oil, if it's an 80-20 or if it's a 50-50, then we're going to go up to about 250, and the synthetic oil is going to turn to a tar at 500. See the difference? So a synthetic oil, if you're 10 miles away from where you want to go, the engine starts heating up and it's running 240, 250, but the needle's not in the red zone, and you decide to drive another 12 miles to where you're going, and it doesn't get into the red zone, which means stop, you're okay with synthetic. It's going to be kind of dicey with conventional or semi-synthetic, but with synthetic, you're home free. So those are the kinds of things that we talk about a lot. Those are the kind of phone calls that we have. We also have lots of emails. And the most fun is, my husband says this and my dad says that. those are just kind of easy to handle. Just so that you know a little bit about my background, I graduated high school in the 70s, and I became a policeman in Scottsdale for about 6 years. And then I left and opened up a mobile station, I think in 1979. So I've been in the business, the car repair business, since 1979. However, you got to give me credit from 1968 to 1972 for this reason. I worked at Ken's Broadway Shell at Broadway and Priest when I was in high school. Ken was actually from Douglas, Arizona, which is where I was born. And Ken knew my family. So he hired me, and I worked after school. So I went to school till about 2 o'clock, and Mom would let me work till 8 or 10. And that's about it. On weekends, I'd go to midnight, and that's okay. And then, I moved up, and I was patching tires and doing oil changes. Now, Ken taught me a lot, but about 10% of what he taught me was bad. And it had to do with a variety of things involved in the car and personal life and all that kind of stuff. However, I learned a lot from him, and I learned how to be fair to the customer, and I learned how to tell him the truth, and I learned that sometimes you have to tell the customer, we need to wait until this gets worse and easier to find, or say to the customer, between now and the beginning of the summer, you need fan belts. And he taught me that, and I was always grateful for that. Ken never sold something that wasn't right, as far as I was concerned. But we also only had conventional oil back then, so everybody came in for 3,000 miles. That's all there was. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We have five lines, so you're sure to get one if you want one. And you can ask questions, or you can say, this is what my husband said, this is what my dad said, or you can say, which car do you like? I want to buy a new car. Which one do you like? Which truck do you like? That kind of stuff. If you have a motorhome, I've been motorhoming since 1976. And so my first motorhome was a Winnebago Brave. And Renee and I are still motorhoming now. I know a lot about tire wear. I know a lot about tire inflation. I know a lot about generators. I know a lot about wheel bearings, all that kind of stuff. So if you have any questions on a motorhome, especially wives, my husband says, and it goes on from there, my husband runs the generator when we're driving, and he says it charges the battery. And my question is, well, what kind of electrical stuff is on? Are the kids in the back and they're watching TV and they're listening to music? I mean, what kind of electrical consumption? No, none. He drives and I sit next to him. Well, he's wasting a lot of gas, and he doesn't need the generator on because that motorhome's probably got an 80 to 120 amp alternator. And if that alternator were to stick or the regulator were to stick, it'd cook the batteries. So there's no real benefit other than peace of mind that you know you're going to have fully charged batteries. But all he needs is a voltmeter. So he checks the voltmeter before he leaves, and the battery is 12.8. And every time he stops, the battery needs to be 12.8 to 13 volts. Then he knows everything is fine. 9.6 is the floor. Your starter doesn't work below 9.6. So when you're driving around and you check the battery and it's got 11 volts in it and you've been on the road for 2 hours, there's a problem. You need to handle that. But at 9.6, God makes the decision for you. And that car, this is what happens when you turn the key. It's going to go click, 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 click. And all of us have heard that noise. That's low voltage. The starter's not going to work. And you're stuck where you're at. So there's lots of different stuff like that. But we have a caller. And who might that be, Gil?
Hello to Harold.
Harold, good morning.
Hi, Mark. Hey, listen, I was listening to the news the other night, and I heard something which I thought was extremely odd, that some of the new car makers are proposing to not include AM/FM radios anymore. Have you heard anything about this? And if so, what's going on here?
Well, everybody has a phone, and there's Wi-Fi everywhere, and everybody's phone is filled with the music that they like. And there's not a lot of income stream from the media for your car anymore, because I don't pay for it. But a lot of times my radio's off because I have other people in the car. So, you know, we're going to church or we got the kids. We're doing something that the radio is inappropriate. In addition to that, there is going to be a time where AM radio goes away. There's just not that much going on in radio. AM radio is not going to last, and I don't know till when. I don't know. And I also know that the umbrella for AM radio is much different than the umbrella for FM. And I think you'll agree that many of the newer model cars have a USB port on the dashboard where you take a thumb drive, you load all the music you like, and you plug it in, and now you listen to your own music. The problem I see is, if you're going to do away with the radio, are you going to do away with the speakers and the equalizer too, so I can just put my own in there and then I can listen to music? Or are you going to take the AM and FM radio out and you're going to take the speakers out of the car and you're going to leave me with the shell for entertainment? Those are the kinds of questions I have.
Another concern was that isn't AM radio set up to give emergency alerts?
Yes.
For different things?
Yes. However, your phone is too. So many of us have that door open, and I got a thing this morning about, I'm up here in Payson right now, and I got a thing this morning about that there was something at the river, and something happened. I didn't really read it, because it's a long way away from me. It wasn't the boogeyman was loose. It wasn't there was a dog in my neighborhood biting horses. None of that happened. So yes, you're right, AMM. But again, everybody has a phone, and when they have a phone, they can open it up and get that. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960, and we'll be back. Welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour, 10 o'clock. Gil and I were talking during the break, and Gil is the engineer that runs our show. He's the one that makes sure that I hit all my marks. For instance, just so you know, I go on the air about 6, 8 after, and then I'm supposed to break at 17, 30 on the button. Not 30 minutes and 60 seconds or 40 seconds. It's 30 on the button. Then 40 is kind of floating out there, so if I hit it anywhere from 38 to 42, Gil can handle that. But I'm out at 58:50. No doubt about it. My last word has to be a second before 58:50. I've been doing radio for a long time, so I know how to do that, and Gil knows how to deal with me. But we were talking about, you know, AM and FM gone. That if we took out the commercials and we just played music, we would gain about 12 minutes, and 12 minutes out of the hour, because that's how much the breaks are, and some commercials is about 12 minutes, and a lot of that is PSAs, public service announcements, and so those are no income kind of stuff. So this big business dilemma is out of my hands, but those are the things that I'm sure they're thinking about. Jim, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
I have a 2014 Ram 1500 with the 5.7-liter Hemi, and I tow a trailer, about 5,500 pounds. So here's the question. You've talked about this before, but in a little different context. What you said on the air before is that in most cases, premium gasoline really has no value. The engine is able to compensate for the different octane. So I'm going to tow this. So usually what's recommended for my truck is a mid-grit. I'm driving to Idaho, and they don't, you know, their standard isn't even 87. It's 85. So, and performance is some concern, right, driving up hills. So
yeah.
What would be your comments in terms of use of fuel, towing a vehicle, and then going up to those states that have a lower octane because of the higher elevation?
Well, I'll do the octane first. You can always go from an 84 to an 86 or an 86 to an 80. And if octane's important, then go ahead and do it. But here's the deal. Your engine and everything else since the last 20 years, there is a knock sensor. And pinging is the pre-ignition of fuel. So something is hot inside the cylinder, and it's hot enough to explode the gas, and then 2 or 3 millionths of a second later, the spark plug fires. That's called pre-ignition. Everybody knows it as pinging. So you're pinging as you drive up a hill. Your truck's never going to ping because it's got a knock sensor in it, and the computer can think faster than you and I can. And as soon as the computer detects that there's someone hitting the block with a hammer, it looks at the timing and it retards it that fast. So it'll knock 1 degree, and if it doesn't go away, it'll knock 2 degrees. You'll never know that happens. Never know that happens. Let me change your question. How many cars in your fleet, Mark? 13. How many of them you put super in? 1. What is that? A twin-turbo Corvette. How about your truck? No, it's a diesel. How about your wife's car? It's a diesel. What about your kids' cars? They're gas. What are you using them? The cheapest gas we can find. So on your trip, if you want to hang around regular, you're probably going to hang around 86 or 88 octane. But here's my bet. How much is your trailer weigh, 5,000?
About 5,500.
Okay, that's fair enough. It's not a big trailer. So I doubt you're going to ping at all. And I bet you, I'll bet you $10 that you're never going to hear it rattle. Never, ever. Unless the check engine light's on, that means there's a problem. I bet you can climb hills, throttle to the floor, and you'll never hear that ping because the computer can think faster than you can. So the computer will immediately drop a degree, then drop another degree, then drop until the ping goes away. And it's called a knock sensor. Pinging and the engine knocking is the same doggone thing. So in your particular case, I wouldn't worry about it. I'd get the cheapest gas, but I'd try to hang around that mid-grade, the regular gas. It is true that really cheap regular gas will ping a lot of cars, not the computer-operated cars, but a lot of carbureted cars. You don't have any of that. You have fuel injection. You have a computer running every aspect of the spark and the fuel and the air that your motor's going to inhale. So, you know, my wife and my kids, I just tell them, buy the cheapest gas you can find. Now, my wife drives a diesel, so there is no octane in diesel. But all the kids and grandkids and stuff, they know what Papa thinks. Buy the cheapest gas you
can. So there be any...
Go ahead.
Will there be any performance difference towing up big climb?
You know, I want to tell you, there will be a difference in performance, but there's no damn way in the world you're going to know it. There's just no way, no way you're going to know it. And that's all there is to
it. It's going to be so small, is what you're saying.
It's almost immeasurable. So if you throttle it up, and let's say you're going up a pretty steep hill, and let's say it's a straight, and so you put it to the floor. That's the maximum amount of fuel that you can give that engine. Rich eliminates pinging. Rich fuel, lots of fuel in the combustion chamber, eliminates pinging. And lower temperatures. So if you're running 240, 250, it might ping on you. But you're not going to be. You're going to run 190 to 220. So you'll be fine. But in the Corvette, there's an obvious difference between cheap regular and high performance super. But if when you're doing that, you're breaking the law. and so if you drive it normally, you'll never know. So anyway, Jim, good luck to you. And the only other advice I have is run your trailer tires at maximum inflation that's written on the side. I don't care what the trailer manufacturer says. Run the maximum inflation and make sure that you have a temperature gun. And then you can check both axles for tire temperature. And if the front tires are hotter, you need to raise the tongue of your trailer a little bit. And if the back tires are hotter, you need to drop the tongue a little bit. And we all have adjustable hitches, and so that's easy. 602-508-0960. There's 5 lines available, and we'll be right back.
Hey, good morning.
Welcome back, everybody. Let me take care of a couple of business here, and then we're going to go to Mike. So, Mike, you hang on. Action Auto Repairs at I-17 in Deer Valley. I've known Tom since 1983. When I first met Tom, he was selling very expensive diagnostic equipment to the automotive industry, and I was at the time was running a mobile gas station. So Tom and I became friends. He went into the business like I did in 1983. Well, I was already there, but in 1983, he's been in Deer Valley and North Phoenix, and he's honest, he's dependable. I like Tom. I've never had a complaint about him as I talk about his shop. So Action Auto Repair is on I-17 northwest corner. I-17 northwest corner. If you live in that area and you don't have a garage, he has ASC Master Certified Technicians. There's management team that is going to take good care of you. But they're not afraid to say you're wrong, but they're going to give you a fair shake. And if you're a customer and your complaint's about $10, you're going to get the $10. So Action Auto Repair, good place to go if you live in that area. Mike, how can I help you?
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I have a 2015 Honda Pilot. And my concern is, every time I go into the repair shop, like this last week, I went into 2 different repair shops, and I ended up spending around $5,000. First time, you know, I went in for an oil change, then they said I needed a brake flush, so I bought that. And then they noticed my shocks were bad, so I had to replace those. And then they thought my transmission was going out. So they said it was going to take 10 days, and I said, I don't have 10 days to, without a vehicle. So I took it to the Honda dealer, and they ended up replacing something called the torque converter, and then they had to replace axles, the front axles. They said those were bad. They wasn't sure how that happened, but those went bad. And then I've had to replace the rack and pinion a couple of years ago twice. And I've replaced the timing belt and the serpentine belt and all those things.
Okay, hold on. How many miles have you got on this?
I have 100,000. I just went over 100,000 miles. Is it time to invest in a new vehicle, or should I just keep repairing all this stuff that's happening to my car?
It's time to find a new shop. That's what it's time to do. cut and dried, it's time to find a new shop. What you're describing here is, I took it in, and they say the transmission's going out. Sometime later, somebody replaced only the torque converter. The difference between the two is $2,000 versus $600. Big deal there. Then somebody wants to do R&R axles. I'm not going to ask you if you had any symptoms, because I know you don't. But axles cause clicking noise. Axles cause vibrations. No clicking noise, no vibrations. Goodbye. Now you got me all wound up. My underwear is in places it shouldn't be. Then you've got a rack and pinion. You know, I replaced... We have a 20-bay shop. We are booked a week in advance. I have some of the finest technicians I've ever had. And we don't do racks until 80 to 100,000 miles. And the symptoms are easy. It's leaking oil, power steering fluid, or when you turn left and right, there's a click. That's it. You know, left and right click, and the oil doesn't look like burnt oil, and it looks cherry red or it's clear, we're done. And then you talk about a timing belt at 100K, you're due for that. So between 90 and 110, yeah, we need to do the timing belt. But what's happening here is they're seeing you coming, the technician is looking over your car, and he's telling his service rider that you need all this stuff, but you need to look in your owner's manual more often and see what the time is for brake fluid. Brake fluid is 100,000 mile, but we have equipment to test the brake fluid for moisture. And if it's over the red line on your test, then yes, you need to have a brake fluid flush. They didn't do that, because if they would have, they'd have showed you. So, you got me all wound up already. But it's what you have at 100,000 miles or less is not normal. And so you need to hang your hat on a shop. What part of town do you live in?
I live in the west part, the northwest part of by Peoria.
Okay, well, Automotive Dynamics is on the north side of Grand, just west of 99th Avenue. I've known Chuck Nide since 1968. Chuck knows the difference between right or wrong. He's not going to pay his technicians to pull your pants down every time you come in. He's not going to put up with that either. They know what your owner's manual is, but you need to know what the intervals are on your owner's manual. You need to pull out your owner's manual and say, wait a minute, you want to do brake fluid flush, but that's something that's called for at 90 to 100,000 miles, and my car has 70,000 miles. Why do you do that? Okay, Mr. Mike, come over here. I'm going to take brake fluid, and I'm going to put it in this little thing, and I'm going to put it on this thing, and I want you to look through this eye. You see the number there? Okay, here's brand new brake fluid. I'm going to put brand new brake fluid and see the difference. Well, there's a world of difference between those two readings. Well, you're not supposed to be at 100. You're supposed to be at 40 or 50. That's the reason I want to flush your brake fluid. We have that equipment. It costs $20. And you can go brake fluid, a litmus paper testing, so you can buy something from the auto parts store to test your brake fluid, and it gives you a pass-fail. So I'm not mad at you. I'm mad at our industry, because right now the good shops are booked beyond belief, and the bad shops are got a... $4.49 oil change, and I'm exaggerating, because they want to bring people in so they can rip their head off with all kinds of automotive repair. And that's just the way it is. That's all there is to it. All righty, well, good luck to you. Thank you very much for calling, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. If you have a car question or you want somebody to break a tie, then I'm the guy. And I just made that up right there. Blackwell Auto is at 40th Street and Greenway. Tom is... weird. He's one of my best friends. But he is so principled. He's not willing to bend a lot. It's his way or the highway, but I like that in him. I like it because when you face him or one of his staffers, they're telling you the truth, and they don't care what you think or what your dad said 25 years ago or what the other shop said. They don't care. And more than likely, they'll have your owner's manual in their hand anyway. So if you live near 40th Street and Greenway, Tom Blackwell, Blackwell Automotive, he's a good guy. Do we have anybody? Oh, we've got somebody on the line. Who might that be?
I knew what you were thinking, Mark. Say hello to Sue.
Sue, good morning. How can I help you?
Hi, Mark. You're all wound up. Also, I have a husband versus wife question. You know how much you love those.
Wait a minute. So. Wait a minute. I'm siding with you. Path of least resistance. Good. I'm siding with you.
Anyway, so we're looking at replacing my husband's commuter Camry to something, you know, nicer. So he wants something with a manual. So he's talking about like a manual, maybe a newer Camaro, because his manual is, he wants to, quote, feel like he's driving.
Okay.
And, you know, back in the day, mileage, et cetera, but is that so much true? And what are your thoughts on manual versus automatic?
Nothing. The manual transmission service might be $50 and the automatic transmission service might be $150. The manual, as long as your husband isn't out there driving the car like Rapid Roy, the race car boy, as long as he doesn't bang the gears.
He goes to the bowling alley, Mark. That's what
okay.
He does. The bowling alley and the grocery store. This is his life.
He's gonna, and I like him already. He's gonna. The transmission oil is gonna last in that particular case 100,000 miles. I don't even know if the clutch will last that as long as he doesn't ride it and he pushes it in, shifts the car, and lets it go. A lot of guys keep their left foot on it and they'll wear the clutch a little bit. No, I think it's an even call. The automatic transmission, properly serviced and not abused, will last 50,000 miles longer than that 4-speed or that 5-speed. Usually we're going to do bearings in those manual transmissions at about 100K. But keep in mind, 100K, 100,000 miles, is four times around the girth of the Earth. Because the equator, four times, I got to get my math right here. The equator is, yeah. I think, I don't know, 50,000 miles around? 25? I say it all the time, but you know, my mind just went blank.
And I can't remember either.
Yeah. So whatever the equator is, that's a whole lot of miles, and people lose sight of that. And so someone will call me with the equator, 602-508-0960, 602-508. But you know, how many years you've been married?
Oh, 30-some, whatever it is now, yeah.
Okay, all right. Well, you got a hard choice.
More math.
Okay, you're going to drive the Camry, or you're going to replace the Camry. What are you going to drive?
Minivan gal. I replaced my old minivan with 303,000 miles on it, thank you very much.
Okay.
With a newer one.
Okay, so you have a new minivan.
How many times is that?
Okay.
Yes.
If you have a new minivan, you know, it's a tough call. I'm not a marriage counselor, but I want to tell you this. This is a no-lose situation. How old is your husband?
55.
Okay. It's you and I both know it's unlikely he's going to be out there drag racing from traffic lights. It's unlikely that he's going to be burning the tires. It's unlikely that he's going to bang first gear, second gear, third gear, fourth gear until he's at 100 miles an hour. You and I both know that. Now, maybe the grandsons will have it for an hour or something like that. But this transmission, based on your husband's age and his driving ability and what he's normally do, the manual will outlast the automatic. The manual will be almost the same money as the transmission. If anything, it'll be a little less. And that's how it goes. But I don't have anything against manuals. I have a manual Corvette, and everybody, my wife, my daughter, my son, everybody loves to drive it. And I don't know what to tell you. I grew up on manuals, on three on the tree as well as four on the floor.
Yes, I had a three on the tree. Well, it was my dad's truck, but I drove that, sure.
Yeah, when was the last traffic ticket your husband had?
Oh, gosh. I don't think he gets those because he's got some.
Okay. Well, that helps me determine whether he deserves a 4-speed or not. Because if he's Rapid Roy, the race car boy, and he's got tickets for speeding all the time, then we're contributing to that. You're contributing to that, not me. So I say it's no harm, no foul. The automatic and the standard, he picks what he wants. And if you got to pick the van, now I've got my marriage counselor hat on. If you got to pick the van, then he gets to pick the car.
The van can load. You can out of a minivan.
Yeah.
You can help kids move and all that stuff.
Right. And in his 4-speed, he can put it in high gear and get better fuel economy than your minivan.
Oh, yeah, definitely. There's no doubt about it.
Okay.
But.
All righty. Well, that's my two
okay,
cents.
Okay, well, we hope you've moved on from your last call on that gentleman. Definitely find a new shop because, my goodness, that's terrible.
Our industry, you know, right now what I don't understand is we are booked to the gills. We're 5 to 10 days out. And we've got cars in that have $3,000, $4,000, $5,000, $10,000 worth of work that need to be done with them because somebody overheated or it's got 100,000 miles and it's due for everything. But right now, there's lots of shops out there that haven't developed a clientele that might be somewhat new, and they've got a debt service, and they're selling everything but the kitchen sink. We see it all the time. Here's the deal. Your owner's manual is the Bible. So you pull out your owner's manual and you say, okay, I know you said I needed spark plugs at 30,000 miles. Could you show me where that's? Can you look up spark plugs in the index? And what does my manual say? Well, I don't know. I don't have time to do that. So you get home, open up your manual, and you have 100,000-mile spark plugs. You just know now, don't go back to that place. Because he's not got your interest in front of his own. So just stay away. Transmission flush, just about all the maintenance in your car is in your manual. And the manual's written for every... They'll say, what's not written for Arizona? Well, that's bull excrement.
Oh, yes. I have heard that from an oil change place before,
yeah.
And I have not returned there.
Yeah. So you say to him,
what's... That's nonsense. I don't want to hear that.
What's the difference between Arizona and New York, or Minnesota and Arizona, or North Dakota and Arizona? Is there a VIN number change where it says... You know, and what is it that's the difference? And if this is something you need, then what's the alternative for my aunt in Kentucky or my aunt in North Dakota? And you'll hear this. That's what you're going to hear. So
exactly.
Those
you
are.
Bet. I have called many a shop on that. Yes, sir.
Yep. All righty. Well, listen, Sue, thank you very much. Tell your husband the
$10
he spent to me go on the manual transmission, tell him to send it to me.
Sounds great. Thanks, Mark. Have a good rest of your day.
Thank you very much, ma'am. Kurt's Auto is up at I-17 in Bell. He's got technicians that are really, really top-notch technicians on a 1 to 10 scale. They're 10s, especially his big dog technician, who I think is his son-in-law. So, if you're up at I-17 in Bell and you don't already have a garage, and there's a lot of dealerships around there, then the independent garage of Kurtz Automotive is where I think you should go. First of all, the scruples and the rules, and everybody understands that this is not a time to take advantage of our customers. This is not a time to sell them something we can't defend. This is not the time to sell them something at 30 when they know automatically that the manual's going to say 90. This is not the time. Let's just address the customer's needs and get the heck out of there. And that's what Kurtz is all about. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We have 5 lines open. Gil will be answering the phone. You can say hi to Gil. But I'd like very much if you'd do me a favor, and that's be nice to Gil. 602-508-0960.
To find out more. Now, once again, here's Mark.
Welcome back, everybody. I want to talk real quick about Larry Harker's Auto. Bob and Ellen own Larry Harker's Auto, and they really know what to do. They're a couple that once you meet Ellen at the front counter and Bob comes out of the shop, you'll shake their hand and you will understand why Mark Salem thinks they and a lot of other shops in this town have a lot to offer. 38th Avenue and Indian School, and they do everything. They do auto electrical work, brake service, auto emissions, vehicle maintenance. They can find out why it failed emissions, and they have the equipment to repair it, blah, blah, blah. And they work on foreign and domestic. I can't tell you how many times I've got a call from a customer who said, I took my call to Harper's, I told them that this is, then they fixed it, and I know it's fixed because it's gone when I picked it up, and they came in $10 under their estimate. So it's Harker's Automotive, 38th Avenue and Indian School. Jim, you're up first.
Thank you, Mark. How you doing?
I'm good. Thank you.
Good. I got a question. We got that 07 Chevy Corvette Coupe. Are you familiar with that plastic elbow on the fuel pump that's leaking or seeping and stuff like that?
Is it an external fuel pump out of the tank?
Yeah.
Okay.
And they said spraying gas.
Yeah.
They're spraying like gas on the insulation and stuff, and it kind of lingers. First, we thought we were overfilling the fuel tank and stuff because we don't use the car that much. It doesn't get driven to the parking lot. And we just started noticing it kind of recently.
Yeah, if you overfill the tank, you'll find stains all over the top and all over the sides of the tank because we're going to throw out a lot of the gas out the top of the tank. And also your canister, and you have you said an 07, so you have a vapor canister. We'll also fill that up with fuel, and you'll have gas out of it. This is what I want you to do. I want you to go to, I always forget the name. It's a website that has every kind of car on it. And and I'll think of the name here in just a minute. But anyway, I want you to go on a couple of automotive websites, and I want you to look up your fuel pump. And a lot of times what they'll say is instead of it being 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, this is 1, 2, 3, 4, 7. And it's an updated pump, and the update deals with the fuel leak. Almost always, you'll find some pattern failure. You can also put Corvette leaking at the pump, at the electric pump, and you'll find all kinds of stuff. But there's one of two ways to fix it. Number one, there's going to be put a new fitting here, or cut the line here, and put a piece of rubber over it, and put some clamps on it, or you just got to replace it. And those are the three options you're going to have.
Yeah, because I noticed on YouTube University, they were showing they were dropping the whole tank and replacing the little elbow at the on the pump.
Well, the tank is inside the pump, or the pump is inside the tank. So yes, you have to drive. But here's the deal: if it leaks inside the tank, you don't lose any gas; you lose pressure. And if your Corvette loses fuel pressure, then it won't do 50 or 60 or 70 or 100 or 120 miles an hour. Do you have any of those speed problems?
No.
Okay.
No, not at all.
How do you know that it's leaking inside the tank?
No, we don't. We think it's the elbow, white elbow that just from the odor.
Okay.
We're not 100% sure. No, we don't know that.
Okay. Sure. I think you need to have somebody look at it because, with all due respect, you're not going to smell nothing. You're not going to smell anything. So it's going to leak, and it's going to cause a leak in the fuel pressure, and there's going to be a drivability problem associated with it. And the O2 sensor is going to set a code for a lean condition because it's not seeing the fuel it normally sees. So there's a lot moving on right here. But you named it U2 University. That's the fix for everything. And if your windshield wipers chatter on the windshield, then replace the tank and all that kind of stuff. But just go into the internet and look and see if your car has been recalled for a fuel pump problem. This kind of wives' tales is something I deal with every day of my life. So,
but being a year, that's not an issue because it's that old. If it's a recall or a fuel pump issue.
Okay, then let's replace all the old parts on your car. That's 3 plus 7 is 10, 12, 13 years old. Let's just do them all.
Yeah,
that's not a good idea. That's not a shop. If one of my technicians said that, he'd be unemployed in seconds. Or one of my service writers said that, well, this could happen, so let's do this. Oh, yeah, well, that's great. It's not going to happen. Well, we could all get lung cancer. We could all have ingrown toenails. But that doesn't mean you do. So, I don't like fixing cars based on what people say that I don't know who they are. You know my name's Mark Salem. You know I'm a master technician. You know I've serviced hundreds of thousands of cars. If my technicians came up with that, I'd be very upset. Anyway, I got to run because my heart rate is up so high. But, Jim, thank you very much. John, you're up next. How can I help you?
Mark, speaking of your heart rate, I've got a 1984 S10 Blazer Tahoe, 2.8, 5-speed. I think I need a transmission.
Okay. What's it doing?
It will grind. It makes a grinding noise, and it strikes me it happens when you're clutching, say in or out of first gear or in or out of reverse, but no other time, pretty much.
Okay, hold on. If you push it all the way to the floor, does it just go into first gear?
Yeah, mostly. If it's going to grind, it'll grind. And real quick, you pull it into neutral, you rev it up, and you give it some pretty good gas.
Okay, that's stop. You are trying to make it happen with something that's going to make it worse. So you told me everything I wanted to know. When you push the clutch all the way to the floor and you put it in first gear, I'll bet you that the second you let up that on that clutch pedal and you let it up a quarter of an inch,
right,
or maybe half an inch, I'll bet that something gets already under load. You describe a clutch adjustment. That's what you describe. The pedal should be in the middle of the stroke. So if it comes off the floor an inch and then it starts moving, then when the pedal is extended, when you push on the pedal after you're under power, you push on the pedal and the clutch starts slipping, there should be an inch on either side of the pedal activity. on either side. And I'll bet you don't have anything on the floor. I bet you push the pedal to the floor. You give it a little gas, and the second you push, you let go of that clutch, the thing wants to move. It's a clutch adjustment. That's all it is.
Whew. God, I hope.
No, I know it is. You gave me what I needed. You see, this conversation has to happen. You gave me what I needed.
Well, and needless to say, you got somebody here that you fear the unknown.
Yep.
I don't know what to think of this. I mean, it feels or
okay. Like, where do you live?
Throw out bearing.
Okay. No, throw out bearings make noise. They make noise. You got to throw out bearing, and it's quiet. You push the pedal, it's noisy. Throw out bearing.
Yeah.
What part of town do you live in?
Maricopa.
Okay. I don't like you.
Yeah.
I don't like you.
I know.
All right. Well, wait a minute. I don't like you because the closest shop to you is me, and I rarely talk about my shop. This isn't about my shop, but Salem Boys, you remember that. Salem Boys, it's on Warner and I-10. You can call there and say, I got a clutch problem. I'd like to bring it down, and I'd like to wait for it. And Andy or my daughter Andy or my son Alan or Daniel, my service writer, is going to say, well, I can get you in 8 days, and how about 11 o'clock? And you say, fine. And you say, I just want to demonstrate a clutch problem, and I'd like you to tell me what it is.
Well, I don't know if I can make it happen on demand. This thing, it won't happen for probably a couple of times that I drive it. And then it'll happen two or three times.
I can't do this. We can't keep changing the parameters. Again, the pedal on the clutch, okay? Put it in first gear, push it to the floor first, put it in first gear, and I want there to be an inch of play before the vehicle starts to move. On the top of the pedal, you get out on the freeway on I-10 and throttle up hard, and then push the clutch pedal, and within about an inch, you should hear the engine start revving. If that's the case, I'm wrong. But you just give them the symptoms. Just give them the symptoms. Don't give them anything else. I can demonstrate the problem. I need your technician for 5 minutes, and I will show him what I'm talking about. Because if you take my technician for a 35-mile drive, I'm going to be really mad at you. So,
No, this is going to be something that somebody that knows what they're doing will pick up on in a hurry.
Well, I got master techs all over my place. Ron, Eddie, Alan, you know, these guys have been around the block, and they're master certified, so they're in every aspect of an automobile. They'll know. And the question really is, between you and me, is my clutch or anything in that area defective? I'd get out in your car, and I'd drive it, and I'd check it, and then I'd lay a little rubber and hand you the keys and say, get out of here. That's what I'd do. If I found nothing wrong in my... But, yeah, I got to run, John. Thank you very much. Darren, you're up first, or next. I'm sorry. Darren, how can I help you?
Darren dropped, so let's go to Tom.
Tom, good morning. Darren dropped, so let's go to Tom. Go ahead, Tom.
Oh, good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
I have a number of old cars, and I was just wondering how long you can go before you need to replace the coolant hoses on it.
You know, really and truly, when they're soft, you push them, you squeeze them, you start at the thermostat on the top hose, and you just kind of pinch it all the way to the radiator. If it gets crunchy, or if it's exceptionally soft, it's time. If they're not crunchy, or if they're rock hard, so if they're really squeezy soft, check the rest of the hoses, and you'll get a feel of what the squeeze is like. But in an old car, the only time we wear out the hoses is when we change the temperature of the coolant. We go from cold to hot, or hot to cold. And that wears out rubber. But if it's just sitting there, you don't see the hot. But to answer your question, this is the answer. I'm getting nervous at 10,000 miles. I'm just getting real nervous, so I don't let any of our hot rods or any of our company vehicles at 10,000 miles. No, I'm not. Everything I own is north of 2005, so I'm thinking the coolant flush is going to be somewhere between 60 and 100,000 miles, and that's. We're putting on miles on those cars. Yours is different. Another thing you can do is you can take it to a shop, and we all have testers, and we can tell what portion is coolant and what portion is water. And so that raises the boiling point. Water boils at 212 and coolant boils at 260 or 280. So we can check it there. Plus, we can take a syringe, pull some out, take a look at it, and tell you, I'd change this if I were you, or no, I wouldn't change this. So there's three things. There's the temperature.
Well, my main concern is just, like on my Honda, the hoses are 19 years old.
Well, that's too long.
I don't know if it's a good idea to replace all those.
How many miles has it got on it?
140,000.
Oh, you're way past. You should have changed those hoses between 75 and 100,000 miles.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Well, look at your owner's manual. Look at your owner's manual, and it'll tell you. Change the hoses and belts.
Oh, I'll have to do that. Okay, it has all new belts.
Okay.
But the hoses, the top one's a little bit hard, and the other ones don't feel bad, but they are 19 years old.
Okay. Well,
and I also have like a 2008 Mini Cooper, and I was wondering if I should change the hose. But
how many miles and what year?
2008, and I have about 65,000 miles on it.
2008. I'm getting a little nervous there. So what are you, 15 okay. years old? 15 years old?
Yeah, it's okay. 14, 15
All right, it's
old.
Time for that one. There's no question in my mind. It's time for that one. Because there's just too many years there, too many heat cycles there. And besides that, hoses aren't that expensive. If you do them yourself, they're not that expensive. So just and then take the old ones and wash them off and put them in your trunk. That way if you blow a hose in Tombstone, Arizona on a Sunday morning at 5 o'clock with a screwdriver, you could put the old hose back on. So that's what I do. I got to run 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. If you have a car question, I've got 5 open lines. We'll be right back. Okay, I have a suggestion for many of you. If you have a question about your car and it says to change the hoses at 100,000 miles, but you want to change them at 60,000 miles because it's 10 years old, just drive by a shop. If you want the name of really good shops, go to marksalem.com and click on Best Car Repair Shops. Us old guys can just look at the hoses and touch the hoses and tell you. No, these are nice and soft and pliable. They're not leaking in any of the clamps, and none of them look like a snake that's swallowed a tennis ball. So if you want to, I'm going to okay these hoses for another 25,000 miles. But in reality, it has to do with simple math. If the hoses are at 100,000 miles or 10 years, and you get 100,000 miles in 6 years, then you need to change your hoses because 100,000 miles shows heat cycles. 100,000 miles is heat them up, cool them off, heat them up, cool them off, and that's what causes rubber to deteriorate. Greg, you're up next. How can I help you?
Excellent. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
I have a 2020 Keystone Montana fifth wheel, and my question is regarding the tires. I know you said always put the tire pressure to maximum. So what I've changed the tires out from the originals, and I have Heartland ST 235-85R16s on them with a max PSI 110 PSI, 4,080 pounds. The GVW of the trailer is 14,300.
Okay, stop. I had to write all this down. How old is the trailer?
That's a 20.
Okay, and you got 14,300 pounds, right? Gross?
Correct.
Okay, and the other tires, the STs, do you have a weight on those? What's the maximum weight that tire can carry?
It says 4,080.
Okay, so four, and you have how many tires? Four?
Four, correct.
16,000 pounds, right? You got 16,000 pounds riding on those tires. So you better have, each one of those tires better equal more. So if we end up, what did I say, 16,000 pounds? 16,000, I'm doing a calculator because I'm stupid otherwise, divided by four, those tires better hold 4,000 pounds each. Now, in order to make me happy, I'd run them at maximum inflation. It's written right on the side of the tire. That's what I do on every car we own. In my fleet of cars, all the company cars, my fleet is my sister, so my grand or my parents, my friends, my families, all the old people in my life. I run everything at maximum inflation. I just do. And nobody hurts. So your tire on maximum inflation says you can run it at 60, and I'm going to give you 4,000 pounds. But it's not going to, I'm not going to, it's not going to hurt me to run 65 or 70. So it's
okay.
It's just a matter of time. What we're getting stuck here with is we've got time versus miles. And really and truly, just stop by a shop and just say, this is what I've got, this is what I'm thinking, what do you think? And the shop's going to say one of two things. I think it is time, or no, I go longer. And so,
yeah.
You
okay.
know, I just...
I've only had the tires on for one season, or since last summer, so I have... probably 6,000 or 7,000 miles on them, I guess. And I pumped them up to 100 psi, and so just because I didn't know any better, so I went to I'll bump them up to 110 then.
Yeah, every vehicle I own, I got a big semi that hauls a 2, 4, 6, 8 tire trailer that it hauls boom lifts and tractors that weigh 25,000-30,000 pounds. I run mm-hmm. all the tires on that semi, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 4, every one of them, 14 tires, I'm running maximum inflation. Here's the deal.
Okay.
You can't go wrong. You can't go wrong. A fully inflated tire is going to run a lot cooler. It's going to bounce out of a hole better. If you half-flap that tire, you're going to go through a hole and cut the sidewall on the tire, plus the engine's going to work harder because it's driving around with four technically flat tires. You remember when you had a bicycle and you pedaled to the gas station because the tires were so flat, then you aired them up and you go,
right.
Whoo, I'm stronger. That's the whole issue.
Yeah.
And a tire fully inflated runs colder. You should have a temperature gun, have it, give it to your wife. She runs the temperature where the sidewall meets the tread while you fill up, and she guns it, and the glue comes apart at 200 degrees. You better be under about 175, and you won't be. You'll be around 100 degrees one way or the other, and that's all
okay,
comfort
zone. I do have tire tenders on, you know, on the valve stem, so
okay.
I can monitor my pressure and temp as I drive. So.
Okay. What's your temperature normally?
Okay. It's usually right around ambient temperature. It just depends.
I was going to say,
stop.
That's exactly what I was going to guess, the ambient temperature. So you already know what the floor is on those tires. So if the ambient temperature is 80 degrees and your tires are 80 degrees, then I certainly wouldn't double the 80. So at I'd be nervous before 160. But then again, you're not going to go from 60 to 160. It's not going to happen. I got to run, Greg. Steve, you're up next. How can I help you?
I got a quick question for you. I have an 05 Crossfire Wrangler Sport, and I was just wondering about shops in my area. I'm in Northwest Phoenix. I mean, Peoria.
Okay. I'd go to Harker's Automotive and ask Bob to look at your suspension and tell you what he thinks you need. That's what I would do.
Suspension?
Would you talk shocks?
No, I said I have an 05 Crossfire, Chrysler Crossfire. I'm trying to find a decent shop who will work on it.
Oh,
you
I
know,
thought
when I need it.
I thought you said something about shock absorbers, and I'm sorry about that.
No.
Okay. All right,
no.
Then. Harker's is, let me look here real quick, because 38th Avenue and Indian School, that's the closest I can get you. I don't have anybody
okay.
that far away. I got Billy at 25th Street Auto. It's like 25th Street and Indian School, but Harker's is a lot
okay.
closer at 38th Avenue. So,
okay, and you can work on crossfires, you think, that
yeah.
Chrysler,
yeah, that,
Mercedes
that,
thing?
They all have spark plugs, and they all have fuel, and they
yeah.
all have timing. So the crossfire
okay.
is really no different. Okay, thank you very
okay.
much. And I'm going to write down TOT Harkers, and then they're going to call me and say, I had a really nice guy come in, and I'm going to say, I need my $300, and they'll send it to me. And I'm lying about that, okay? Harry, good morning, Harry. How can I help you?
Good morning. How are you doing this morning? Sound a little wound up.
Yeah, no. It's just a lot of things that I as you can well tell, I'm kind of adamant about. And I
know.
Our industry, there are some in our industry, maybe 25% of them out there, want to tell people different. And the reason is obvious, Harry. It's because it benefits them. So
right.
Okay, go.
Hey, I wanted to, you probably got a lot of information already, but the Equator's roughly 25,000. It's actually a little less. It changes a little bit, so, you know.
Okay, and 25,000. And thank you for that. That makes it refreshes my hard drive.
Round number, yeah.
And so if you get 50,000 miles out of your tire, you've driven the Equator twice. And 100,000 miles is four times around the equator. If that's when we're going to change your coolant. I think it puts it in more perspective for people.
Easy math.
Yeah, easy math. And you gave me the 25 I needed. Harry, the older I get, sometimes I forget my name. You know what I mean?
Well, welcome to the club.
Okay. All right.
Hey, I want to comment.
Go ahead.
On the AM radio deal, I've heard that too, and I've heard some of the AM stations, you know, commenting about it, you know, because of the political climate. I know you don't like to get political, but when you're on, you know, AM stations, your station you're on too, I listen to it quite a bit. They have you know, some commentators on there that are conservative.
Okay,
and you get,
Harry, hold your thought right there. They got some commentators and they're conservative. Hold your thought right there, because I'm already late on this break. I'll be right back.
And they're not necessarily, they may leave out the other half of the story. Well, I'm hearing it, and I'm hearing it on AM, another side of the story. It gives me a chance to judge what maybe is going on. It gives me a good idea then.
Okay.
But when you take away AM radio or whatever, that's going to cut a lot of the opposition to certain political groups. It's a win for them. And I think we ought to have all the information we can get.
Okay. And let me comment real quick, and then I'm going to move up to Bob. It's that way on AM and FM. You can have an AM station that has lawyers on it, and you can have an FM station that has lawyers, or you could have lawyers on KKNT from 9 to 10 and from 6 to 7. And they could be diametrically different. This guy defends insurance companies, and this guy's a plaintiff's attorney, and he wants you to call him if you stubbed your toe when you walked into McDonald's so he can sue him. You can get plenty of that already. I don't know if I'm going to be real upset about AM radio, even though I'm on AM radio. I don't know that we're not going to adapt, but I can tell you I'm pretty sure KKNT, like everybody else, will come up with some kind of idea. Maybe we'll go on the Internet. Maybe we'll go to an FM if we can get a number. I don't know the answer to that, Harry, but I see your point, and I agree with your point. I like the idea of going to a conservative station to a liberal station, and I laugh a lot. My wife doesn't like it, but she punches me a lot. So, Harry, I understand, but I got to go to Bob. Bob, good morning. How can I help you?
Morning, Mark. I bought a new oil filter for my 2007 Chevy Malibu this morning.
Okay.
At a discount store. It was $14.02. It's called a synthetic endurance, and it says 25,000 mile protection.
Okay, that's
so. What do you think about leaving an oil filter on for 25,000 miles?
Well, it just depends on the care and the age of the motor, how many miles it's gone on. If you have north of 150,000 miles, I'd be a little bit concerned on the oil filter. In that kind of an environment, but up to that point, I really wouldn't care, and I don't think. The question is how are you going to build an oil filter better than we have now? And they use the word synthetic, which tells everybody it's a supreme part for your car. I don't agree with that. I don't agree with the marketing. I don't like the idea of 25,000. Now, I got some old guys that are doing 9,000, 8,000, 9, and they'll tell us to leave the filter alone. Well, that's 18,000 miles. That doesn't bother me. If the filter plugs up, it'll bypass. It's not going to filter the oil, and you won't even know it's bypassing. But so what? So there's just not that much trash. You know, we weighed new filters full of oil, and then we weigh old oil filters with old oil. And to be honest with you, we couldn't tell the difference with respect to weight. So it's not like we're washing pounds of metal and putting it in the oil filter. We're not. That's not the case. So I don't think I'd lose a lot of sleep about that, Bob. I would, and I don't like the marketing. The marketing suggests that our oil filter is premium oil filter, and right now every oil filter out there meets minimum specifications. So it can be enhanced with Teflon, and it can do this, and it knows the difference on which particle of trash I hang on to and which one I pass on. Those are all marketing things. To be perfectly honest with you, I bet that three companies make all the oil filters in the United States. So they're all going to be painted differently, and they're all going to have a different brand on them, and there's going to be one of them that has 25,000 miles. But they didn't make that oil filter. They bought an oil filter, and they're having it painted that color. So I don't like the idea, and it wouldn't be something I would ever suggest to my customers. And I'm going to go out on this limb. I bet you could call 30 shops, and more than 20 of them would say that's BS. And it's not because we're going to sell you an oil filter. It's just a stupid idea. It's going to cause problems, and it ain't going to fix anything. So it's not going to make your car love you anymore or your engine love you anymore. It's not going to do that. So this is marketing, and I've had my say. I got to take a break, Bob. Thank you for waiting as long as you did. I truly appreciate it. But if I didn't cover everything, just stay on the line. But anybody else, 602-508-0960. The lines are open, and I have at least four and maybe five lines. So if you have a comment or question, or if you want to argue, I'll do my best to contain my big mouth, and we'll talk about the facts of the issue. So 602-508-0960, and we'll be back in just a minute.
Hey, good morning. You're heading to the airport, right?
Yep, thanks for...
The Proud. Welcome back, everybody. You just heard the AM commercial, and he makes good points. And certainly, if you feel strongly about that you don't want AM gone, then you should do what you're told by him. Let's go to the phones. Jay, I'll take Jay first. Jay, good morning. How can I help you?
Good morning. How are you?
I'm good. Good. Thank you.
So my question is, I've got a 2015 Jeep Grand Cherokee, and I've gone to Air Park, and I didn't have a look at this, but they had I had a light bulb that I needed replaced, and they wanted like $375 to replace the light bulb. Then I got the light bulb and brought it to a gas station, and they put it in free. So I don't really want to use them to get it fixed or whatever the problem is, but I brought my car over to a Big Grand Tire, and I thought it was going to be an alignment issue because the car shakes underneath when I accelerate, and it's slow to pick up until I get above about maybe 30 or 40 miles an hour. And a lot of times I have to put it in sport mode, and the engine light's on. They said that the car is drivable and it's fine, but I want to figure out what exactly is going on, and I wanted to know if you had any recommendations for a mechanic that I could go to that would be good that deals with Jeeps.
Okay, well, your Jeep's no different than any other car out there. It has a motor transmission. It has drive axles. You're describing a drive shaft problem or some kind of vibration that's caused, because you said it's directly related to whether you're on the throttle or back of the throttle or whatever, whatever. So that's easy. What part of town do you live in?
Scottsdale.
Okay. Bell Automotive is at 87th Street in McDowell. Craig would have no problem with this car. From north of that, you're going to get into... I'll tell you who else wouldn't have any problem. They're not on my list of best car repair shops, but Bridwell on the Scottsdale and Lincoln, the southwest corner. Those boys could diagnose your car. They're just going to say, take me for a ride and show it. And then they're going to put it up on the rack and touch everything, and they're going, this joint's bad. And then they're going to bid the joint. So that's really what it is. It's not going to be a tire because you can make it go away, and a tire with an egg or a tire that's coming apart won't go away. And so if it happens on acceleration and deceleration, but you can put the throttle in the middle and it won't be there, then it's a drive shaft problem. It could be a drive axle problem or a drive shaft problem or anything like that, but that's where you're looking. Okay?
So you said Bell Automotive...
Yes.
And that's at 87th and Bell?
Yeah, that's 87th and the 101, and I'm sorry if I said Bell. It's the 101 is 88th Street in Scottsdale. So Bell Automotive is just west of the 101 on the north side of McDowell,
Okay.
All right.
And then you had one other recommendation?
Craig would be a great guy. You can do that, or you can go to Bridwell at Scottsdale Lincoln. But both of those guys have enough experience to diagnose a vibration.
Okay.
Okay.
All right, great.
Thank you.
Get Bell Automotive.
All right.
Thank you much.
Okay. It just riles me up, as you can tell. when the shop or you regurgitate that the shop told you this, and it's just in violation of all the fair laws out there with respect to what the manual says, what your car looks like. If you have a problem, just go to a trusted repair shop and say, I'm told this, would you look at it and tell me what you think? People might say, oh, well, they're always going to say, yes, you know, I agree with this diagnosis. That's wrong. I'd say a third of the shops might say that, but the other two-thirds of the shops that I'm aware of are going to tell you this is not needed. And besides that, if you do have this problem, they misdiagnosed it because I've checked those parts that they want to replace. Right now, our labor rates have gone from 125 to 175 as an industry. Right now, we're marking up our parts more because we're paying more for them. And so right now is a real flexy problem right now, and you have a tough time. But a lot of us old guys, we don't owe anything on our business. We don't have land payments of $10,000 and $12,000 a month. We have really good technicians. Our overhead is nothing because we've been in business 20, 30, 40 years. So that's the kind of shop you're looking for. You're not looking for a shop that popped out of the woodwork 3 days ago, 3 months ago, or 3 years ago. After 3 years, most of the good ones are going to know the difference between right and wrong. Okay, Strictly Diesel Service and Repair is a diesel shop that I've always talked about. They're on I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road. Nate is just one of the most knowledgeable people about the Dodge, the Ford, and the GM diesels. The GM's got the 6.6, the Dodge has got the 6.7, and the Chevrolet's got the 6.7. So when you look at all of those, Nate knows them all. So if you've got an oil leak, Nate can diagnose it. If you've got a drivability problem, Nate can diagnose it. As a matter of fact, there are times that our shop calls Nate and say, hey, this is what we got. What do you think? And then we try to agree. And Nate's going to say, well, what about it? It makes it at 60 but not 40. And then there's a back and forth. But Nate's just really a good guy. Strictly Diesel Service and Repair. And his website's open 24 hours a day. And he's at I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road. And he's a good guy. Do we have anybody else on the air? Or on the
Phone lines are open.
Okay. I'm going to go ahead and talk about Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing. Thompson's is the only shop in Mesa that we could find that we could honestly tell you it's a good shop. That doesn't mean that all the other shops are bad. It just means, well, first of all, the Thompson family and I go back to the late 70s. And so Brian and Thelma represent two families. Brian's family was in the gas station business and Thelma's family was in the gas station business. And I was in the gas station business from 68 to 72. I worked for a Shell station. So they've been involved in a very long time in the gas station business. They smelled gasoline when they had dinner, if their dad didn't wash their hands good. Well, Brian and Thelma are the perfect match. Thelma handles the front counter. Brian handles the shop. And he knows the difference between a repair and BS. And Brian, once you meet Brian and Thelma, you'll understand that it's a great shop. So if you're in Mesa, unfortunately, there's only one shop. And he does towing as well. He's on Main Street just east of Stapley. Main and Stapley, just east, Thompson's Auto Repair. If you want to look at my list of auto repair, just go to marksalem.com. marksalem.com. We have lots of information at marksalem.com. We have FAQs that have been built around our show since 1988. So I started keeping track of all the questions, and then when we built our website, I had a vibration. And I have an oil leak, and I have my air conditioning doesn't blow cold, and I have this and that. So we've conglomerated all these questions into about, 20, 30, 40 FAQs. So marksalem.com. And there's also a list of the best shops, I think. So you could go to marksalem.com, and you could click on Mark's Best Shops, and then I'll tell you all about the shops. I don't take the responsibility lightly. There's been shops that I took on that I had to take off. And some of them are still in business, and I'm okay with that. But I don't like their way of doing business. I don't like what they tell customers. I don't like how they fix cars. And I don't like how they treat customers after the customer comes back and says, I have the same problem. So there's a few of those out there. I'm not going to tell you who they are. I'm not even going to tell you if you decide to do business with them and you say, hey, I do business with Salem. And I'm going to say, okay, how do they treat you? No, they treat me good. Are they fixing your problems? Yeah, they are. what the hell am I going to, excuse me, what the heck am I going to say? I'm going to not say nothing because they're happy. And I just hit on a couple of bullet points that I think are important, and you're happy with them too. So I'm not the soothsayer of all the good shops in the world. I just know when you regurgitate something you've told, I know that that's BS, and I know that they're slow, and I know they're generating sales. So it's not a good idea to flush your transmission in a car that's a 2,000 car, to flush the transmission every 25,000 miles. That's not a good idea. It's not a good idea to buy new hoses and belts before 75 to 100,000 miles. It's not a good idea to repack your wheel bearings except when you're doing your brakes, and there's a substantial discount while we do your brakes if we do your wheel pack at the same time. So those are the kinds of things that that our industry, we know. And I want to tell you, I think 8 out of 10 shops in the Phoenix area are honest. I think the other 20% or the other two shops are either incompetent or what we call bandits. And that's all there is to it. And don't even send your shop name to me because I'm not going to comment. I'm just going to tell you, the guys on the list I know do good work, and geographically we've got them all over. ASE certification is technician goes through, and there are 8 tests for the automotive side. We have a big truck side, we have a school bus side, we've got a variety of different things for ASE certification, automotive service excellence. If you pass all 8 automotive tests, you become a master technician. I hire only master technicians, and I'm a master technician. After you reach so many years of being a master technician, you don't have to take the test anymore. You become emeritus. So you're a master technician for the rest of your life. Master technicians have been tested, and they retest every 5 years. Well, I'm pretty well north of 60 years old, and so I've been able to just coast on my master certified technician label because I don't have to take the test anymore. I think that they kind of honor us in that respect, saying, you old guys that have been taking ASE tests for 20, 30, 40 years, we know you're not part of the problem, so we're just going to call you emeritus, you're retired, and if you want to work, you can. So that's kind of how it is. And ASE tests every aspect of the car. They have air conditioning and heating, and if you're certified in air conditioning and heating, then you pass that test. Front end suspension, alignments, shock absorbers, ride control, that's going to be a separate test. Performance, spark plugs, tune-ups, codes on engines, check engine lights, that's going to be on the tune-up side or ignition system side. So that's kind of how it works. Do we have a caller?
Nope, lines are
okay, open. I thought I heard
there's a dog in the back.
There's a dog in the back?
I heard a bell.
There's no dog in my studio right now. Unless, you're talking about my wife, Gil. Would that be who you're talking about?
No. I heard something, but I thought it was a bell.
And actually, I heard what I thought was a keychain kind of thing, but it's okay. It's okay. Gil and I have been together since 2011. So we know one another very, very well, and I can tease him, and he can tease me. But here's the best part about Gil. If I make a mistake and miss a time, he can fix it. He can fix it. So if I'm supposed to be out at 50-50, so 58 minutes and 50 seconds, better be my last word. And he's watching. And if I don't get past there, if I'm late, he can fix it. He can fix it. So let me just tell you a little bit about radio. We go on the air about 6 minutes after the hour. At 17, I'm supposed to break, and that's kind of a floater. So I can be 16, 17, 18, and I've taken it to 19 before. Nobody cares. But at 30, at the bottom of the hour, 30 minutes, I better hit that dog square on the head. Then we go to 40 minutes. We do a break at 40, and that's flexible, and I can do 38. I can do 42. And Gil doesn't use any bad words. But at 58:50, which is in three minutes from right now, at 58:50, I got to be there. I just got to be there. And Gil, even if I wasn't, Gil would go in and take all my breaths out of the tape, and he would make it 58:50. But he's a great guy, and I've enjoyed working for Gil for a very long time. And He's one of the best board ops. He's one of the best engineers. He's one of the best producers. And I think they call you guys producers, don't they?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. So, board op, technical guy, producer, he's one of the best I've ever had. Now, I've had some good ones, but here's what Gil does better. He just handles the show better. He'll say to me, you're 10 seconds. Or he'll say to me, I got your 10 seconds covered. Or he'll say, I got four callers for you, Greg, Steve, Harry, and Bob, and I'm going to give those to you one at a time.
Can I get you one more caller?
Yeah, and he just said in my ear, you got one more caller. Who's that?
Say hello to John.
John, good morning. You're my last caller, but go right ahead.
Hey, Mark, how you doing?
Good.
Good. I was calling for two reasons. One, I wanted to give a shout-out to Alan, your son.
Yeah.
He installed a blower for me on a car and did a fantastic job.
Thank you.
Yeah, excellent job. I live out in Waste Mesa, but I chose for a specific reason because you do a very good job. The other thing is on tire pressure. Is it a big deal? With the newer cars, they have the tire pressure gauge at. Let's say, is it a big deal the difference between 2 PSI with one tire to the other?
No, not at all. No, I don't worry about that.
Okay.
I don't worry about that at all. I don't worry about that at all. But I want to thank you for something.
1 minute.
Alan's been in the business since he was in high school, even before he was in high school. He worked for Discount Tire first, and then he came to work for Dad. And Alan has morphed into this fine technician who has the ability. He does lift tires and wheels. He does blowers. He does turbos. And he's really integrated in the diesel performance and diesel diagnosis division. I'm really proud of him. I'm really proud of him. And here's why. I don't get into any trouble from him. Nobody's mad at him. And you already know he stands 8 feet tall. And he's just a great guy. And the other day he said to me, Dad, I had to buy an injector back. And I said, why? And he goes, well, we misdiagnosed it. And I said, so what was the credit? And he said this. And I says, well, what was the debit? And he said this. And we lost and the customer won. So anyway, I got to go. But mark at marksalem.com. Mark at marksalem.com.